Thank you for listening to this podcast series as part of the artwork If I Knew Time As Well As You Do, Part 2. My name is Eva Honaut, artist and host for this series, as part of my newest sculptural work made for Marineterrein Amsterdam. Feel free to go to the sculpture and listen to the episodes while spending time with the work. The work you can find on the Marineterrein next to Building 22 from 26th of August 2021. Now we are going to listen to the first contribution by researcher and writer Flavia Dodan. Her research is focused on the politics of artificial intelligence and algorithms at the intersection of colonialism, race, and gender. Additionally to her independent work, she is a senior researcher at Sandberg Institute, where she also teaches at Design Department and the Critical Studies Department. On your knee, with tea for two and two for tea, just me for you and you for me alone.
You are tense. You need a moment, a break, something to come back to yourself. So you make a cup of tea. You heat the water and, distracted into your own thoughts, you stare at the water cooker. You hear the bubbling increase in intensity. You grab a cup and, still lost in your own thoughts, you decide to make a whole teapot. To drink it slowly, you say to yourself. The water in the cooker makes a hissing sound, almost like an angry kitten, indicating that it is ready to pour into the pot. The tea you are about to drink has a long history. In 1557, the expanding Portuguese Empire established a trading port in Macau, China, where tea was widely drunk. However, there is no mention of them bringing any samples back to Portugal or to the Iberian Peninsula. It was in the 17th century, almost 400 years ago, that the first tea arrived to the port of Amsterdam. Historians found that the first reference to the use of tea in the Netherlands appears in a letter from January 2nd in 1637 from the Lords 17, the name by which the 17 directors of the Dutch East India Company were popularly known, to the Governor General of the Netherlands East India at Batavia. It reads, "As tea begins to come into use by some of the people, we expect some jars of Chinese as well as Japanese tea with each ship." The tea you drink today was made possible by the sea voyages of the colonial vessels transporting it from Asia. The Dutch East India Company ran a carefully designed maritime route that involved the transport of coffee and tea as well as exotic plants, fruits and animals. However, at the time, the Dutch did not have the correct drinking vessels or the correct tea-making equipment. Porcelain cups and teapots were not part of the daily utensils in Dutch households. It was importing Chinese and Japanese porcelain that served as the source of inspiration for the Delft blue teacups and teapots that were incorporated into the daily lives of wealthy households in the Netherlands. Eventually, to make the tea drinking equipment more accessible to more households, Delft blue was made with clay instead of porcelain. Chinese decorative motifs were replaced by religious motifs, native Dutch scenes with windmills and fishing boats, hunting scenes, landscapes and seascapes. Nobody knows with certainty when sugar and tea became widespread companions in Europe. There are historical records about the practice of mixing sugar into tea in what is now modern-day Iran, already in the 8th century. However, it was the British and the Dutch who made the mix popular in Europe. It was by this popularization that the demand of sugarcane increased to new levels. In Intoxicating Spaces, a research project by the universities of Oldenburg in Germany, Utrecht in the Netherlands, and Stockholm in Sweden, They point that the pleasurable rush of new intoxicants in Europe was made possible by the establishment of slave economies across the Atlantic world. The genteel environments of coffee houses, tea room, and smoking club superimposed the violence and incivility of colony, plantation, and below decks. The tea leaves made possible through the colonial plantations in the East met the sugar made possible by the colonial plantations in the West. The water routes connecting the different geographies for the leisure of European consumers. The researchers also insist that in a very real and direct sense, then, European consumers chasing highs were responsible for initiating and sustaining the almost unimaginable cruelties of plantation slavery, from the trauma of kidnapping and enslavement in Africa to the terror of the Middle Passage, to the daily horrors of subjugation on estates, which combined long hours and back-breaking work in tropical conditions with militaristic discipline and punishments that included whipping, branding, castration, ear cropping, and amputation.
If somebody like Judith Butler were to be asked, "What is this?" she would never have said, "This is a bottle of tea." She would have said something like, "If we accept the metaphysical notion of language identifying clearly objects and taking all this into account, then may we not," she likes to put it in this rhetorically, "risk the hypothesis that in the conditions of our language game, this can be said to be a bottle of tea," and so on.
Excuse interruption. It seems we have some noise interference from outside, but let's get back to this moment. You pour yourself a cup from the teapot. You absent-mindedly stir. The water ripples slightly, and the almost imperceptible clinking sound of the spoon against the cup is soothing, isn't it? You take a deep breath and bring the cup towards your mouth. The scent of the tea, tiny droplets of condensed water carrying the perfume of leaves, flowers, the earth, the hand that touched the branches of the plant, the sea that served as a conduit for this moment. You can almost smell it all. Take a first sip. You're about to drink 34 liters of water. According to a research report published by the UNESCO Institute for Water Education, a single cup of tea drunk in the Netherlands requires no less than 34 liters of water. The report traces the water consumption required to produce a single cup. If we assume that a standard cup of tea is 250 milliliters, producing this cup of tea requires 136 equal-sized cups of water. Most tea is produced in rain-fed areas. Only a minor fraction of the world tea production comes from areas with supplementary irrigation, a practice sometimes applied at lower altitudes. The water needed for post-harvest processing can be neglected if compared to the water needed for growing the tea plant. The virtual water content of tea thus mainly consists of rainwater. The figure calculated for the Dutch situation are quite representative as a global average. Total tea consumption in the Netherlands requires a total of 90 million cubic meters of water per year, which is equal to 1.2% of the annual flow of the Maas River. Incidentally, the river used as an example in this report was in the news this year due to the unprecedented floods in the south of the Netherlands, Belgium, and Germany. The Dutch people account for 0.3% of the world tea consumption. Altogether, the world population requires about 30 billion cubic meters of water per year in order to be able to drink tea. This is the equivalent of four times the annual Maas River runoff. The UNESCO researchers point out that the water needed to drink tea in the Netherlands is actually not Dutch water, because the tea is produced in Southeast Asia, Indonesia, China, Sri Lanka, India, and Bangladesh, and some other countries in different parts of the world, such as Argentina, Turkey, Brazil, Tanzania, and South Africa. There is also tea import from some countries that do not produce tea themselves, such as Germany, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, and Belgium or Luxembourg. These are merely intermediate countries where tea is just transited or upgraded, for example through blending or making brand names to get higher economic returns. By far the most important sources of the Dutch tea are Indonesia, China and Sri Lanka. The latter is in the tea world still known as Ceylon. Due to the fact that the production of tea for many people in the world, certainly for the Dutch people, is in a country far off, most people have little idea of the resources needed to enable them to consume this tea. If the introduction of tea was made possible through colonial sea routes and enslaved labour, the contemporary consumption of tea is made possible by a transferring of natural resources from the places producing tea to the countries consuming the tea. The team of researchers from the Water Institute insist with a key question: what are the hidden natural resources in a product? Which and how many natural resources were needed in order to enable us to consume a certain product? They looked into the total volume of water needed to drink one cup of tea. The volume of water consumed during the production processes of tea is the virtual water content of tea. The intention behind their idea of starting a discussion about the virtual water volumes hidden in products comes from a need to measure the fact that still water-scarce countries export water-intensive products. In general terms, the virtual water content of a commodity or service is defined as the volume of water required to produce this commodity or service. When tea is traded from one place to another, there is a significant transfer of water in its virtual form. In this way, water is flowing in its virtual form from the tea-producing countries to the tea-consuming countries. Import of virtual water into the consuming countries means that these countries indirectly employ the water in the producing countries. You daydream while drinking your tea. You are here and there. This was a much-needed break, you think to yourself. Elsewhere, the rain falls touching the leaves of a plant. Workers gather at dawn to begin the harvest, and you go back to your routine.
Thank you for listening to this first episode. The Siri contributions are made by Lavia Dodan, Lisa Prince and Leila Durani, myself and Dionne Ome from Local Tea, and Bin Ko and Sumin Lee, who work together as Comfort Ball. The editing is done by Duncan Robertson.